Hey, welcome to Blue Wire. After you finish listening to this awesome Blue Wire podcast, make sure you check out the other pods in our Blue Wire family. Okay, I know, you're probably wondering, how do I do that? Well, it's simple. Go to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts and search Blue Wire. Ta-da! They will all be there, so have fun listening.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Roan. The NCAA is down to their Final Four. The Cleveland Cavaliers are down to their own Final Four, as there are only four games left in the regular season. And who better to help break everything down than my co-host, Carter Rodriguez? But before we get to Carter, I think we should start at the most logical place. I mean, Winnipeg Jets, man, they're struggling right now. It looks like they might not only lose the number one seed in the conference, they might not even have home ice in the first round. And I know Paul Maurice has the most wins in the NHL over the last 2 years, but do you think he might be gone?
I don't know, Justin. You know what I've always said about Paul Maurice is that I just don't know if he, if he's a big game coach.
Yeah.
And I think we've been seeing that, you know. It doesn't feel encouraging. With the Jets currently down 4-1 to the Minnesota Wild, who, by the way, have my favorite jerseys in the whole sport.
Ooh, that's a bad take, but you know what?
They're alternates. They're forest greens. I love them.
They are nice, but I don't know if I'd go that far. But well, we are not here to talk
personal about taste, Justin.
Yeah, but your taste sucks. You need me to help you work your way through your own opinions because you can't trust them on your own.
Who has some really nice alternate sweaters in hockey is also the Blue Jackets.
That's true.
To the point where I cannot believe they wear their regular ones.
I feel that way about the Jets heritage jerseys. They should absolutely be the primary. But as I mentioned, the Cavs are down to the final four games of the regular season. You look at that schedule, by the way, and Carter, I have a feeling that we've seen our last win of the season back on March 20th. You look at Sacramento, at Golden State, hosting San Antonio, and then against a Charlotte team that likely is going to need that to get into the playoffs as they're right on the bubble. Those are teams that want to get wins for the most part. I guess the only exception would be Sacramento as they're out of the hunt. But
they don't have their own pick, so they're going to try to win.
Right, and they're also just a good team, especially at home. So you look at that, and I think we've seen the best of this season. I think 19 wins is where the final tally is going to end up.
I'll tell you what, man, doesn't feel like they're going to end the year on a 10-game losing streak.
you think there's going to be the one random one?
No, I just mean like, no, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying like the vibe around the team does not match what the results are going to end up being.
Oh, I can definitely see that. I think they understood that this has been a development year. We talked about it with Spencer Davies, which, by the way, listeners, if you haven't checked it out, I know the NCAA tournament's been going on, but we had a great interview with Spencer Davies about the locker room kind of vibes, energies, and the growth throughout this season.
It's one of our few podcasts that didn't age like milk.
Right. Yes, absolutely. That one has a little bit of staying power. So check that one out. But yeah, they've had a positive attitude throughout the season. The one thing I'd kind of note is it does look like they're kind of burning out a little bit. Jetty Osman's looked a little tired. He struggled like crazy. He didn't struggle. He was dog shit against Phoenix. LA, he didn't shoot great, but got to the line and kind of that helped work things out. But the team as a whole, they just kind of seem a little run down, and some of that might even be trying to integrate new pieces with Tristan Thompson and Nance getting healthy again.
Also, they don't want to win.
That helps.
It's a factor.
Which, hey, by the way, that loss to Phoenix is pretty damn big, because you look at Phoenix's schedule. They got two games against tanking teams in New Orleans and Dallas. If they win just one of those games and we lose out, obviously that doesn't affect the top four odds, but it does have an interesting effect on the rest of the lottery odds, because Cleveland and Phoenix would split. So what that means is both teams would have a 3.5% chance of falling to 7 rather than a 7% chance where Cleveland currently stands, 23% chance at 6, and 21% chance at 5. So the odds even out all the way through if they tie record-wise.
Yeah, I think the important thing to note is that now that we're all getting a little more exposure to this draft class, and like I don't think there's any shame in saying that a lot of people, including me, like, you know, we didn't watch a lot of Jarrett Culver or some of these other fringe lottery picks until the tournament. But now that we've had all that exposure, it starts to feel like it matters a little bit more where they fall in the draft. And you start to feel a little bit more passionate about leaning at a five as opposed to a seven, you know?
Right.
So I, you know, as much as we've, you know, I think probably correctly talked about how these new draft odds make tanking not as important. Now that we're here, it's like, well, if we can match the Suns
for
the
right, and it's not even just a can. Like I'm not advocating for shutting down Kevin Love. I think we can lose out pretty organically. And it seems at this point, especially with Chicago being two wins up on the Cavs,
that's safe and sound as can be.
We are locked in for the best possible lottery odds at getting a pick 1 through 4, finishing,
which is really what matters.
That's absolutely the biggest thing. And if Phoenix happens to win one or two more games and we move up, that just kind of helps out how far we can fall, which I guess is nice if it comes to that. But I think ultimately the Cavs have played this pretty well this season in terms of managing rest and managing kind of what the floor of the season is, given the talent that they still have.
I think it was you that that mentioned the potential scenario of, like, what if Cavs land at 2 and the Suns land at 4? Because, man, like, honestly, and what's funny is, like, people would call it a heist if the Cavs were able to get the Suns next year's first round pick, top 5 protected or something like that, along with the 4th overall pick. But like, that's kind of what the market is, to be honest. Like,
oh, absolutely.
Like that is the price to move up that high in the draft. And you do pay a premium. And I think that would be a situation where the Cavs would be thrilled to
absolutely,
maybe the 8th pick next year, assuming the Suns ever get better ever.
Would you rather have that pick or would you rather have Mikal Bridges?
I'd rather have the pick.
I'd like Bridges.
I mean, I like Bridges, but like, it's just a matter of, like, you know,
a boat's a boat, but the mystery box could be anything.
Well, more specifically, I want what I'd want is to have a shot at, you know, maybe that pick rolls over and you get it in the double draft when one and done's gone. It's just, it's a matter of extra cost control and extra chance at, you know, a guy on their timeline. Not saying Bridges is some old man, but like, just it, I just prefer making the choice as opposed to being stuck with a player.
That's fair. You know, I always gravitate more towards known commodities, and while Bridges hasn't been fantastic, I think he has shown some of his potential. But yeah, absolutely. Like, the key there in that scenario is that trading down from 2 to 4 guarantees that at 4, you're going to get either RJ Barrett or Jarrett Culver, which I think, as you can have opinions on either of those guys, but I think it's tough to justify an opinion that the difference between those guys isn't smaller than the value of a first-round pick, like an additional pick.
I'd be okay with that. If you offered me a Suns top 5 protected first and Jarrett Culver and RJ Barrett, or I could just take the other one, I think the answer is pretty clear.
Right. And I have a proclamation. I'm walking back what I said last week. I'm back in on RJ Barrett as number 2. I just, as funny as this is and as counter as it goes to what you see on NBA Twitter, it's his playmaking that actually kind of gets me the most excited. I think he has the highest ceiling in terms of that. I don't know if you saw this, but Duke was ranked, they were ranked outside of the top 330 in terms of three-point shooting. And I just think both he and Zion have been horrifically misused. And when you get them into a system where there is spacing, I mean, God, David Nwaba would be their Ray Allen in comparison. I just think that he's a smart player that was forced into a role that was a little outside of his skill set, but that the experience will ultimately do him good.
Yeah, I mean, his godfather, Steve Nash, was talking about his passing vision on Twitter. No conflict of interest there, must be said.
Neither me or Steve have
Have as just, you know, pure just basketball fans. That's all. That's the only motivation you have. Right. I don't know, man. I don't really care, actually. I just don't have a strong opinion on it. Like, I see why you might not want Barrett. But like, I also think, like, just, you know how I get, man. Like, if I think NBA Twitter is being stupid about something, I probably swing too hard the other way.
And that's 100% what's going on here.
And boy, is NBA Twitter being stupid about RJ Barrett. Are we really citing his clutch shooting percentage in games that they lost? Is that what we're doing in the year of our Lord 2019?
Oh, the worst was, so he, in the final minute of their loss to Michigan State, he took one horrifically bad three that was a dumb decision. Then the next possession down the floor, Zion tried dribbling on the three-point line. The defender was forcing him right. Zion can't go right, so he kind of probed for about 12 seconds and decided, with the shot clock running down, to pass it to RJ, who was forced to throw up a three. And everyone's like, my God, why did RJ take that shot? Why didn't Zion? And it's, well, Zion couldn't dribble past his guy, so what do you expect to happen? Yes, he's made some poor decisions, but the biggest thing for me, too, is just that he's been someone that everything I've heard is that he has a really, really, really strong work ethic. And I think when you look at the difference that Cavs training staff has made for guys like Jetty Osman, who couldn't dribble and couldn't shoot, Colin Sexton, who couldn't really shoot and had no range at the start of this year, I just think RJ's shot, it looks a lot better than either of those guys a year ago. And if you get him in the right situation, the right training staff, I really think that kind of the sky's the limit with this potential.
Well, thank God the Cavs are getting an entirely new coaching staff. I don't know, man. I think RJ makes a ton of sense on this Cavs team. And I think that's probably why you're gravitating to him. In a way that, like, you know, maybe Zion's actually a bit of a clunky fit, and you know, beyond just the people being a little butthurt about the Cavs winning another lottery, I think one of the legit reasons that people might be disappointed that aren't Cavs fans if the Cavs win the lottery is that it's like, you know, like, it's so easy to imagine Zion with like a savant playmaker, because he definitely is a play finisher at this stage of his basketball life.
Absolutely. You put them with Trae Young, they're going to destroy worlds.
Yeah, it's going to be, and it's going to be really fun to watch while they do it. And, you know, the Cavs have some, you know, burgeoning playmakers, but not really. You know, like, everyone, they have like six guys who can average three assists a game. Like, you know, like, that's just not like, that's not exact. It's not a perfect fit at all. So, I'm not where you are, where it's like, I feel like you almost kind of want to fall out of one so you can take someone who makes a little more sense.
I'm going to be very ecstatic if we get Zion. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm more comfortable elsewhere. And some of it, too, I tweeted this out, but I have this fear that Zion is going to take some work and there's going to be an adjustment period. And there's nothing more annoying to me that if the Cavs get him and he struggles at all, it's going to be blamed on the Cavs. He's going to be viewed as a perfect prospect that the Cavs ruined. And that conversation is just going to be so exhausting to me. It'll be, it's the Cavs' fault that he can't shoot and dribble when he can't do that right now. And any shortcomings is just going to be put on the organization, no matter what they do. And to me, that just sounds exhausting. And there's also what we've talked about before, which is the kind of the nostalgia aspect of this. And okay, I'd kind of like to see a guy that fits alongside what they already have, which you mentioned the Cavs kind of playmaking. RJ Barrett, he had an assist percentage of 24 in college, which college is a little more stingy in the assist rules. The only Cavs player to have a higher one than that is Matthew Dellavedova. After that, it's Campaign at 20%, Larry Nance at 17.7, Andrew Harrison at 16.3, and Brandon Knight.
We hardly knew ye.
And Brandon Knight, George Hill, and Jordan Clarkson, Alec Burks round out the top eight. So there's no one close that to what RJ did in terms of passing last year at Duke, and that's on a team that had absolutely no shooters and didn't run pick and roll for him. So that's that. I think that he's a better fit and a better pass than people realize.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, like because Duke runs such an archaic offense, it's like almost hard for me to imagine. Like we do this a lot with deep defensively. We'll talk about how we can't like translate a prospect over, like, oh, especially if they play for Q's or something like that. Like Matisse Thybulle for Washington. Like everyone's like, hey, we're all pretty sure he's going to be a good defensive prospect, but he plays in the 2-3, so that's like kind of hard to. It's hard to project a little bit. We don't really do that enough with offense. Like we probably should. It's like RJ Barrett almost certainly will be a primarily pick and roll initiator in the NBA because almost every lead ball handler is primarily a pick and roll initiator in the NBA. Like how many guys aren't at this point, you know, like even guys, teams with more motion based systems, like you'll see like the Warriors pre KD, you know, like Kerr was a little loath to run pick and roll, but when, you know, push came to shove, that they would still run it pretty heavy when they needed a bucket. So, I mean, how many possessions have we even seen the guy do it? It feels like a very marginal amount.
And there's usually a center posting up on the strong side.
I've said it a billion times. Marquise Bolden just breaks my heart, man. Just posting up and ruining plays. That's his
right.
It's really hard to imagine. I mean, Culver is really easy to imagine because of the role he plays for Texas Tech on both ends of the ball. But I mean, there's a reason RJ has the pedigree and came in as a higher ranked prospect. He's younger. He's a freshman. Culver's a sophomore, but this is kind of like why I think the Cavs are actually in kind of a win-win spot here, because it would be unlikely that both are off the board when they're picking at this point. And boy, is the lottery going to be a stressful day, but I really do think I'd be happy with, I would say those three. I think everyone else in the draft, I'd take with reservations, you know, like, I mean, if the Cavs are picking fifth and Ja Morant is somehow weirdly still on the board, then sure, I guess. Yeah.
Oh yeah. You 100% take him at that point.
But in terms of guys that I'm just like excited about and can imagine being on the team next year, you know, it does feel like those three. Is there anyone else other than those three that like really makes you feel good?
No, there isn't. And we've talked about RJ. My final point with him is he's been misused in a lot of the same ways that Jason Tatum was at Duke. And it seems every single guy that's getting drafted from Duke is excelling and looking better than they did at Duke because they've all been misused. Like RJ averaged like 10 points per game more than Tatum, double the assists. Now Tatum's apparently the only player in the league with Anthony Davis. So what does that tell you? But Culver, the thing with him, I do believe in his offensive upside. I think he can be a very good offensive player. But what separates him from RJ in my mind is that I think he's a much, much better two-way player. I really believe in his defense. And to me, that would be really exciting. Like those two guys would really, really excite me. Zion would really excite me. After that, honestly, it wouldn't matter to me if you got Ja Morant, Cody White, or Kobe. Brandon Clark. Kobe, so, thank you. We're already doing pretty well with Kobe's in the Cavs organization, so another one would be welcome. But yeah, him, White, and Clark, I think would excite me. Clark has a low ceiling, but again, that's kind of part of my need and my want for the Cavs to play defense at some point.
And in fairness, like if you're picking sixth, you know, you're picking one of the two. You're either taking a high ceiling, low floor guy or a high floor, low ceiling guy. And, you know, that's what happens when you don't get your top two or three picks on your big board.
Right.
You're now taking guys with some more warts. I mean, yeah, there's concerns that RJ could, you know, a guy like RJ does limit your ceiling a little more than you might think. But I just think it, with this draft where it is, you have to take the chance.
Right, right. And what excites me about Clark is almost that he could play a similar role to like Pascal Siakam, where I can actually see him fitting alongside Kevin Love pretty well and defending the more mobile of the two bigs. And if they're playing against a post-up guy, you put Love on him. And he does everything. Like, he's just such a smart, cerebral player. And, of course he's Canadian. So I'm all in on it.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't watched him as much as the other guys near the top of the draft, but I mean, everyone, like, he is the prototypical, like, draft Twitter loves this guy. And you know, sometimes that's a bit of a blessing and a curse, but it does seem like this guy's going to be efficient as long as he can stretch his jumper out. Because, I mean, the guy shoots like 70% on twos or something like outrageous. Like Zion is like,
that's correct.
Zion is like this historical finisher around the rim. And then somehow Brandon Clark is also a historical finisher around the rim, which is kind of jarring. By the way, Russ Westbrook is 3 rebounds short of a 20-20-20 game.
Jesus, that is true.
And you know how we both feel about Russ's stat sheet nights, but oh my God.
I want that to happen. Like, do whatever it takes. I don't care how much you have to bastardize the game. That is absurd. And you just know that has changed someone's entire fantasy playoffs.
Oh my God. That's an insane stat line. He actually also has 4 steals, so he could do a 5x4 20-20-20. By the way, I don't know if you remember this, but this was like, I would say like NBA like 2K like 12 or something like that. They had an achievement. This was like peak Andrei Kirilenko years.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was even earlier than that, like 2009 or something like that. But they had an achievement for a 5x5.
I remember that
was when Kirilenko was doing that every now and again. In his prime, and I never got that fucking achievement. And to this day, Justin, I've never gotten a 5x5 in 2K.
See, I got the 5x5. I got the 5x5, and that was something I would shoot for. And I would always be a really lanky power forward that could pass and stuff because I wanted to get that. But yeah, that's I do recall that, and that's the eventual mold that we'll see Jetty Osman fall into later in his career.
Yeah, he's just got to get more and more comfortable.
Seems like a realistic goal for him.
Yeah, and you know, as Jetty gets comfortable, we want to make sure that you guys are comfortable. And to that end, Blue Wire, we're teaming up with Harry's to make sure our listeners are shaving comfortably.
Our boys at Harry's.
Now, Justin, I'm a Harry's man now. Have you continued your journey with Harry's?
I mean, you can ask my wife, but I am a bit of a Harry's man still.
I actually very much enjoyed the experience. When I got my trial kit that came with using harrys.com/bluewire, it gave me the, it asked if I wanted to add like a mystery box item for like, I think it was like $5 extra or something like that, or maybe it was just $1, something very affordable. And I said, to hell with it, and I did it, and it came with this this aftershave that has aloe in it. Oh man, Justin, ooh,
I love a good aloe.
Well, because I always get real, I can be a reckless shaver, if you know what I'm saying. And to that end, you know, I hate getting razor burn in my face, so the aftershave really does it. Anyway, Blue Wire, teaming up with Harry's. Make sure our listeners are shaving comfortably. Go to harrys.com/bluewire to save $10 on a value trial set, the one I just mentioned, which includes a 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and a trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel. The shave gel is also pretty lovely. And a travel blade cover, which actually I just love because I always put my razor up on like surfaces. I'm very lazy with my razor and I always like ruin it. So the cover is just dope. It has like a nice little breathable thing for any excess moisture to drip out of. You get all that for just $3 shipped right to your door. Enough with the cheap razors. It's totally worth trying Harry's. Harry's is fixed shaving by combining a simple, clean design with quality and durable blades at a fair price. Harry's founders were tired of paying for razors that were overpriced and over-designed. Looking at you, 47 blade razor that probably just came out. Harry's bought a world-class blade factory in Germany that has been making quality blades for over 95 years. Join the 10 million who have tried Harry's. Claim your trial offer by going to harrys.com/bluewire. All of Harry's blades come with a 100% quality guarantee. If you don't love your shave, let them know. They'll give you a full refund, which you're not going to want. It's only $3 for a trial set, Justin. Again, make sure you go to harrys.com/bluewire to redeem your razor for $3.
Boom. I mean, you got to do it. They're great.
Sneaky, very great product. So, and one that I use regularly. So big ups to Harry's.
Speaking of razor blades, the Jets are down 5-1 now.
It's going to be okay, Justin. So
I might eat some, but yeah, continue.
So for the second half of this podcast, I had a little thought experiment that I wanted to kind of run through with you for this Cavs team, because we've talked a lot about this, about how all the bad money the Cavs took on for next year is pretty much expiring after next season.
Correct.
So with that said, a lot of that money can be flipped and used as an expiring deal to take on more bad money in order to take on more assets. So we know this. We know that the Cavs have this in their back pocket. And I recently started a franchise in 2K with the Cavs and immediately made 9 trades because of this. You know, it's like so easy just to like completely like, I don't need Jordan Clarkson. I don't need John Henson. You just kind of run through it all.
Right.
And to that end, you know, like obviously like after I was done with the first 7 trade day for one team in NBA history, I kind of was thinking, well, the Cavs aren't going to be able to do that. Like they're not going to.
Right.
So I was kind of curious who you thought kind of was worth keeping around. Guys that might not have the best cap number, but if you're choosing between, you know, where to move on from Brandon Knight or Matthew Dellavedova, for example, you know, what kind of choices are you willing to make? Who are you willing to keep around moving forward? Knowing, by the way, that this team is going to be dangerously close to the tax line after they dump J.R. Smith for bad money in July.
Right, right. And I don't know how much that, whether or not that's even going to happen with J.R., but I have 2 answers for you. My first is a lazy hedge, which is that's going to be dependent on what the respective returns are. I think you have to evaluate, hey, what am I getting back for Brandon Knight? Is it appreciably better than what I'm getting for Matthew Dellavedova? And then you just kind of go down the list from there. Because I think that there would be value, especially if you don't get someone that's as comfortable kind of initiating the offense in the draft. I think there's a value in keeping Brandon Knight and playing him alongside Sexton. I think we've seen those lineups work really well. And that's kind of a nice backup point guard to have. He's more stabilizing than Jordan Clarkson is, for example. So I think he'd be a guy that I would try to prioritize keeping. Tristan Thompson's on an expiring deal as well. If they don't work out an extension with him, which would, I'm sure, be received very well by Cavs Twitter. If they don't work out an extension for him and they do end up moving him, then I'd be more into potentially keeping John Henson and either playing him to see what his value is or seeing if that could be a long-term fit, because those stretch fives that are good on defense are a little bit rare. So I think Henson and Knight would be the 2 guys I'd kind of keep an eye on. I'm not totally opposed to Jordan Clarkson as being a bench scorer. I think he's actually been pretty good this year. But all of that's relative to what the market says for these guys.
So keep 2, Clarkson, Knight, Dellavedova.
I'm keeping Clarkson and Knight.
Really? See, I just prefer Dally, to be honest. I think he has more cachet. Like, I think he has some more cachet with the crowd, which for bad teams does matter. I still think like he sets such a good tone culturally.
Right, but as a 5 seed next season,
I think they're keeping their pick again next season. And as a result, like I think this team's still going to be pretty tough, and it's going to get younger actually, which I don't think people are accounting for when they're thinking about how this team's going to grow. Like right. Teams that get younger typically get worse.
It does happen now.
Like this is some extenuating circumstances made the Cavs much worse than they, which worse than they are. But they're still incentivized to try to keep that top 10 protected pick that would go to Atlanta otherwise and turn into 2 seconds if it doesn't convey next year. So,
right. And I think what they do next year is similar to what they were pretending to do this year, which is, hey, how are these first 2 months going? Is this going to be an Indiana Pacers like situation where, hey, everything's just clicking. Our young guys are playing well. Our veterans are stepping up and staying healthy. And if that's the case, then I think that they just continue to kind of go for it. And that might sway which guys they're moving on from. The one thing I did like about this year, though, is the quote-unquote bad contracts they added were actually better basketball fits for this team all year. They almost improved the actual product and the supporting cast to help develop Sexton and Jetty. Like Alec Burks was a nice little fit. Delly's been a good fit. Brandon Knight's worked out really well. And I think that they are going to try to get guys that aren't just total dead weight. I think they're going to get guys that at least in theory would fit alongside this roster.
Yeah, I think that's more just a matter of random chance. I mean, they also added Marquise Chris, so.
right. But
which is fine, by the way. I'm not being critical. You know, that's
right.
That's just the way it is. I'm surprised that you're considering keeping Henson at all. I just don't see a future for where he's on this team, just given the logjam at center.
No, that would only be if you traded Tristan Thompson, which I don't think. Like, I think it's more likely Thompson's on the team than Henson. I think that Henson's a pretty clear, easy guy to move. I think someone's going to take a chance on him, and he's probably going to be the guy that nets you the most value, in my opinion. Out of those contracts, I think he's the guy that most teams are like, oh,
he feels like he has some like Rodney Hood value, where it's like, hey, if like from the perspective of like a team trading for Henson might think, especially if he has a nice like first half of the year, which I don't know if he's even going to get the opportunity to do that with that center position where it is, but like if he's showing some signs, like it'll be
theoretical. Really, Henson is sexy. Like I can see trading for him in the summer.
Yeah, maybe. I think the Cavs would be wise to keep their phone lines open on that front, especially as everyone gears up to make a run at Kevin Durant and all these other free agents. Like, it just does feel like the Cavs have a lot of bullets in their chamber to take on really bad money if they can.
Man, this is going to be an exciting summer. Like, there's lot of guys that could be moved. They have 2 first-round picks. That's exciting. You have the JR domino that's been teetering over for a while, and we're going to find out one way or another at the draft. And, God, we're just like 5 weeks away from the draft lottery, which I'm going to – you're the logistics guy. I'm the idea guy. I think this might even be a shared idea, but we gotta do a live show. We got to figure out a way to communicate with our loyal and lovely listeners and live stream our reactions. I might even take the next day off work and just pour myself a bottle of whiskey and just kind of lean into the insanity, because it is going to be one of the most stressful and franchise defining moments that we've had in a while.
Yeah. It's weird to have the off season matter again. Well, in a fun way.
Yeah. The last time the off season mattered this much was, where's Kevin Durant going to go?
Well, I meant for as a Cavs fan specifically, you know.
Well, hey, that was pretty important as a Cavs fan that took away a title from us.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I don't know. It is going to be pretty wild. I before we completely move on from this exercise, I kind of just want to ask you, like, I'm going to run through the roster and just ask if you expect them to be in the rotation for the Cavs next season, whether that's on the roster or out of the or off the team. Whether they're just off on the bench or off the team altogether.
Okay, so is this an opening night thing or
opening night?
Okay.
Brandon Knight.
Yes.
Jordan Clarkson.
No.
You really think they're going to move Jordan Clarkson?
I think that he might be moved on draft night.
That'd be wild. Matthew Dellavedova.
Yes.
Colin Sexton.
Yes.
J.R. Smith.
No.
David Nwaba.
Yes.
I think he's on the team. I don't think he's in the rotation. I think they add a bunch of wings this summer.
Oh, God. I forgot about the rotation part of this. I'm just thinking roster. But, yeah, I guess. Well, what's in the rotation? I think he's going to be more in the rotation than Delly.
Interesting. Nick Stauskas.
Not in the rotation on the team.
Not on the team or in the rotation. Come on.
No. Sauce is going to be there. He's going to be there alongside RJ, Tristan. It's going to be beautiful.
Jetty Osman.
Yes.
John Henson.
No.
Marquise Chris.
No.
Thank God. Larry Nance.
Yes.
Channing Fry.
Boo. Sad. On the bench.
Hopefully. Kevin Love, obviously. Oh, actually, I guess it's not obvious.
Yeah. But I think the obvious you were referring to is my opinion on the matter, which, yeah. Yes, he's going to be here.
Tristan Thompson.
Yes, on a new contract.
Ante Zizic.
No, he's going to get traded as the Cavs trade up.
The perfect throw-in for a draft night deal.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. I think that sounds about right. I mean, you're going to have a bunch of new pieces added to this team, and it's going to be weird having two first rounders again. Like,
oh yeah. Yeah. It's going to be weird. We're going to trade up to 16. We're going to get Nazir Little there. it's going to be exciting, man.
I'm nine rookie wings. It's going to be good. That's how you win.
Yes. That is how you get the fifth seed.
That's going to be a five seeder.
Yeah, that's a quality five. We'll be going up against the Marc Gasol and Kyle Lowry Raptors in the first round, and Jetty will bring them nightmares once again.
That's depressing.
Honestly, though, in all seriousness, if we do get RJ and it really pans out and he's like rookie of the year good, and you do get a series against Toronto, you need to know how much Toronto fans are going to hate the Cavs for getting RJ. Like, no, he has more hype up here than Wiggins ever did. And part of that's coming
from basketball.
USA. Exactly. He beat USA, 38 points in that game. He's basketball royalty. His dad is the GM and president of the national team. His godfather, Steve goddamn Nash. And there isn't the motor question. Like, he's kind of more your typical Canadian tryhard that everyone up here values. So I'm with it. And my God, would Toronto fans hate us, which it is a great feeling. Like, that's a lane that we want to get back into.
Yeah. I miss people hating us for the right reasons.
Hopefully they hate us for winning the lottery again. That'll be funny.
That'll be funny. I mean, yeah, I really do feel like, I don't know if the team's going to be much better next year, at least at their best, than what they were at their best this year. But with that said, like, I still do think that this team has the potential to be really fun and interesting, that's kind of the case in its own way. Sorry to double back to it, but it's kind of the case in its own way for Barrett. Like, Culver might just be a guy, you know, like Barrett, he's going to be something big.
He's going to be divisive. Like, yeah. What I love about him beyond everything I stated is he's going to bring me back to one of my favorite experiences as a Cavs fan, which was just how much NBA Twitter hated Kyrie. And I feel like I could replicate some of that with RJ. He's just a little less weird off the court, which is definitely an asset. But I love that experience. I love having a guy that everyone, even though he's good, they hate the way that he's good. And that's a lot of fun to me. By the way, Russ got 20-20-21.
Oh, he went for it.
Yes.
I respect it. Yeah, I think he got two. Like, I think everyone got pulled and he was like, no. I'm fucking doing this.
Man, that is an accomplishment. How about that?
Nuts.
Silence.
Just like, yeah, we were saying this before we started recording that it's just such a weird spot where the last, I don't know, 3 weeks haven't mattered in the whole league, actually. Like, even like as we see teams like jockey in the West for positioning, like, I just don't really care about where they get, where everyone lands. And in the East, it's like the only real drama is, you know, who makes the 7-8 spots. It's a tough time. Tough time.
Right.
Yeah. Thank God we've had college basketball to actually be interesting for a minute.
Right. And the problem is that has now slowed down as we get into the Final Four in April. But
yep.
At least we have the question with Chicago, which I said it was going to be basically really, really difficult for us to catch Chicago. And that seems like it's not even a possibility anymore. And now we have a realistic possibility of Phoenix potentially winning one of these games. And that would be a lot of fun, even though it doesn't change whether or not we get one of those top four picks and guys that we're excited about. Because I think that's one of the keys, is we just got to land in the top four because someone's going to like Morant more than us. And that's going to enable us to take one of, well, obviously not Zion, if you aren't number one, but RJ or Culver. So
yeah, the one thing there is that, like, it does seem like some people would do like Darius Garland out of Andy, and that,
right, there's the potential for Culver, because on the latest ESPN board, I think they have Culver at 6, so they're like, we'd still be holding out hope if we fall. And some people really like Hunter, even though his shot is like a goddamn trebuchet. His stroke really is
leaning on that trebuchet joke recently.
I know. And every single time I've Googled how to spell it, cause I have no idea. But my point is his release is slower than Anthony Bennett's metabolism. So I have very, very
a new joke that made me laugh.
There you go. Well, see, not everybody is in the Fear the Sword group chat, so they don't get to hear my trebuchet jokes.
That's fair.
Well, this seems like a good place to transition and wrap this damn thing up. Big thanks to Harry's. Harry's is back. I'm all excited about that. Make sure that you get your trial kit at harrys.com/bluewire. Really easy. Big shout out and thanks to all our listeners as well. You guys have been awesome with your support all season. We'll probably, after the year is done, transition to one-a-week pods unless something big happens. We'll do our favorite, or Carter's favorite, emergency podcasts. And, we'll have a lot of coverage as we get to the draft lottery and eventually the draft. So that should be fun. Remember, you can support the show by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, cook those books, tell your friends and family about the podcast. Until next time, go Cavs.